Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, and it's 7 o'clock, and we're on the West Coast, and it's time for Life in the Labyrinth. And we were on Chapter 3, and, you know, and we just couldn't get through all of it last week, because Chapter 3 actually forms the basis of us leaving where we were with human biological machine and really where we were with practical work on self and its companion, the joy of sacrifice. And now we're actually saying, okay, you learned that. You have a sense of what that is now. Now let's be in the labyrinth. Let's see what it means like to be there. And let's be there and exercise what we're learning. Chapter 3 opens that door and starts to tell us, give us some hints of what it might look like. The other thing about it, and I want to say this because of some of the guests we have as well, is that we know this material. All we're doing is we're putting markers on it so that when we see it again, we can mark it as such. And in a sense, it's a way of, it's like what I call putting a deposit in the essence bank, okay? Because the machine has had domination. That's been our life, correct? And so now we're just moving into a new realm. So Chapter 3 is important. It's a pivotal chapter, and we're going to just take some time. We've gone through half of it, and Marianne, where did we leave off exactly?
Well, first of all, before we do that, I just wanted to note that the reason that we... It's not the reason, but just to take note of the chapter title as to how far we could get in 1 week. The ultimate puzzle.
Yeah.
The ultimate puzzle is the title of this chapter. So.
Who? So Silverdale's not, I don't think, is going to make it tonight. So the ultimate puzzle.
So I think we got to the bottom of 20.
Okay.
To the bottom of 20.
Yes. Okay, we're going to rewind just a little bit, and we're going to start on just above that is the first, some of the important definitions. The labyrinth, a giant multidimensional cardboard cutout whose inner matrices form along invisible ley lines juxtaposed with alternating topological connections and discontinuities. Now, at first blush, that sounds really, we look at that mean, it sounds very scientific. But what is a ley line, Ivan?
I understand that the ley line is an invisible geographical feature.
MA knows.
Yeah.
You know what a ley line is?
I'm not sure it's a scientific term.
It's a metaphysical
term. That's the way I look at it.
It's a line of magnetic resonance on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually like, that's why we have jet lag, because you wind up in a different magnetic zone, and you're the different time zone, but it affects the human body because you're different magnetically. You're in a different magnetic zone. So the ley lines, so we're looking for ley lines. This is so incredibly important, but people that do anything well and have penetrated anything understand that immensely. You know, like musicians, you know when you're on the right ley line, correct? You know when you're there. You know when you're writing a piece of poetry that was the right phraseology. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Even scientists, you haven't practiced for a while,
mm-hmm.
but you know when you're there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, I do business.
If you're concentrating.
Well, what did it say before? It says that this only works when it's intentional.
Mm-hmm. You have to be involved with it.
You have to be involved.
Whatever it is.
We are involved. We've already got to that place.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to give it put some meat on the bones, so to speak. As in any elaborate geometric construct, access points and blockages are to be found everywhere, of course. Some blockages actually exist objectively. We are, and then jumping ahead, where there is no wall. Here's an important point. When there is no wall, we painstakingly erect an area of futility. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that a beautiful line? We painstakingly erect a wall of futility, an area of futility. It's like the machine is alone. The machine doesn't know what to do. So it creates barriers and impossibilities. But we're creating it. If you read the, have you done readings from the ABD at all? Have you? Isn't it unusual? And when you get into the, what is the second or third part, Jana, where you have the
The unresponsive
guide. And all these manifestations are occurring, and the mantra is, it's coming from you. It's just a point of recognition. So just it's like we just know that we do that, right? Oh, I see. We do that. That's something we do. So the machine will do it. I was talking to somebody earlier today at breakfast and talked about ego. And he was doing something and was somewhat successful at it, and the ego came up. I said, of course it's going to come up. That's what works. That's what the machine does, right? So anyway, we construct these walls around the possibility of voyaging. In the real world, the unobstructed universe in which our morphological presence has expanded into, the whole field of all possible attention points, we are rarely prepared for unconnected events and rarely, if ever, see things coming. Even though we may be seeing clear signals long in advance. Okay, so what does that mean? We see clear signals long in advance. Didn't we start to touch on that a little bit?
A little bit.
What does it mean we start to see clear signals in advance? Is any, post that as a question, if you would. We see clear signals long in advance. What does that mean to you? In this,
it says of things coming, right?
Of things
that
coming.
Are coming. We don't see things that are coming, but we see clear signals.
Yeah.
One thing I think about is the idea of the new categories. So we see clear signals, but we're thinking in old categories. So we can't relate what we're seeing. We can't fit it in anywhere. We have to maybe shift our point of view or think in new categories to accept the information that we're getting. The clear signal is there, but we may not be...
The hint is there.
The hint is there, but
and
we're not capable of taking
it. It's in the space.
Steps.
It's in the space. Yeah, well, there's an indication of what the trail is. There's an indication of what the trail is. And the space is telling you what that is. And we all, see, the whole thing is that we already know some of these things. Like we get like a little bit of a precognitive sense of something. And like someone's going to call, or it's time to go do this, or time to call that person. All I'm saying is that does not come from the mechanical machine. Like you were talking about listening with your literal brain. It didn't quite work. And when that kind of like settled down, you're able to hear. You're able to hear. The literal brain, the machine brain.
The beta brain.
Basically, it's the beta brain. Yeah.
Roof brain.
Roof brain, the beta brain, the monkey mind. You know what it is.
So, can I talk to something, Dave?
Yeah, please.
Have you got comments over there, Molly? Some signals that can be registered through intuition.
Yeah.
We try to think logically about the signals.
But it has nothing to
do
with
that.
those signals.
Yeah, I was going to say that I must say this paragraph stumped me.
Okay. Let's dig into it.
Yeah, there's an irrationality about it because in reading over this, it seems to me it says in the real world, which is not that area of futility, right?
That's right.
Not the machine-confined futility area. In the real world, the unobstructed universe in which our morphological presence has expanded into the whole field of all possible attention points, which is, that's every
world of infinity.
That means
yeah.
like everything everywhere. And what I associate that with is, I think in the American Book of the Dead, there's at least one point, maybe more than one, where E.J. talks about having where your awareness, your consciousness, is like it's not that you're in the room, but you are the room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like your consciousness is your awareness is expanded to where morphology is your shape. So you're no longer a body in a chamber; you are the whole chamber. And it talks about that in some of the chambers in the Book of the Dead. So this is an expanded morphology. We are rarely prepared for unconnected events. Okay, so this is what I'm not getting. If this is your infinitely expanded attention, the points are everywhere, and you have attention on everything. How is it that we're still rarely, we're still not prepared?
We're not prepared.
We're not prepared. But what if our attention is on everything everywhere? How much more prepared can we get?
Because we can't hang out there.
Well, that I would vouch for. Yeah,
we can't hang out there, and we
can't. And Moksha says that the key word is unconnected. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think I agree with you.
Yes.
Okay, because the attention points are everywhere and the attention is on everything and so on. And then just the fact that there's something that's unconnected to whatever there is here in this real world must be the undetectability part. Right? Okay.
You're being hit with non-sequiturs.
That's what it sounds
okay.
like.
Go ahead, Molly.
One of the things that artists said artists have invented is that they can see unconnected.
Is it that the events are unconnected, or it's just that we can't see the connection?
Yes.
Is that Arya?
Yes, I think it's yes, Mark. Beyond our filters, we have to be careful. Don't get too hung up on that. All right.
On the unconnectedness of it.
Yeah, because basically what it's telling us, this paragraph and this whole event is, it's unconnected from some point of view, and the point of view that we bring into it is the point of view of the machine. And goodness gracious, it will appear to be unconnected. And sometimes, but then the question is, okay, so what? And then what? And then what?
Yeah, I just say, fucker with bonsai. So what? Big deal.
Big deal. It's like, let it be so. Let it be so.
Right.
Because maybe the reason for that unconnectivity will show itself later.
I think we better continue and maybe we'll get some more clues on this.
Okay.
What do you got, Molly?
Yeah. Okay, so let's just push on a little bit.
Connect the dots later.
Okay, so then the next paragraph is the essential self and the machine reactions to the maze are extremely variable. That's the whole point. Any voyager is liable to feel lost, incoherent, disoriented, complacent. Complacent, that's horrid. Okay, fearful, panic-stricken, confused, or just plain stupid. Deep as we are in that annoyingly dense form of stupidity that seems to rise out of nowhere during periods of machine threat. And I think that we just recognize how the thing works. how the thing works. It just works like that. When you get into those spaces, the machine is going to grapple for anything it can to come back. You know, you've had that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to it wants to reassert itself and
reform.
It wants to reform, and we talked
mm-hmm.
about that extensively in the human biological machine. Is a part of the skill is knowing how to fall asleep, and that you can.
Yeah.
Yet you're not panicked.
It's pretty much why you said you couldn't stay in that state. You might not be able to stay in that state where you've expanded into the whole field of all possible attention points. That's pretty heavy duty. You could actually do that.
But it takes,
for,
like, anything,
you know,
else, and I think maybe my biggest mantra is it takes practice and allowing ourselves to hang out there. It just takes practice. And it's just a different form of practice. And all I'm saying is that this stuff, the bardos are going to, are, in a sense, they're always there. It's where are our eyes.
Yeah, I just wanted to repeat something. I wasn't here last week, but I listened to that class, and I really liked something that you touched on there, which was saying it was in relation to this. I just dropped a friend.
It's okay.
Yeah. I'll have to come back to it.
It's okay with me. I mean, it's okay that that happens.
Yeah, it was something. I was thinking of something that you said last week.
So the room we're in now is a different room than we were in 15 minutes ago. It's becoming a different room. It looks like it's the same room. Pardon? There's no one to tell. It's just the people in the room.
Yeah. How about that morphology change? That's a problem. Yeah,
but the people in the room can know that.
I remember what I was thinking of is this idea that you touched on, that the previous book, the human biological machine, and even the practical work on self have to do with the establishing this relationship between the essential self and the machine, and that's the waking state. That the essential self gets to be present and have attention when the machine is in the waking state, and so on, and how to get into the waking state and all of that in the human biological machine. And this book is now concerning itself with, which is a big question that I have, like, all over the human biological machine discussion. What is it that you do when you get into this waking state? Because he only goes as far in the other book as saying that you can study the work or look at it, or you see it across something, or you look into it, or you contemplate it. Yeah. And
here's
now,
what you do.
Yeah. Now we're
okay.
Talking about, okay, you're in the waiting state, and you're subject to disoriented, complacent, sort of panic-stricken, incoherent. And now, what are you going to do?
So now we're about to enter into a different phase of it, and so we're making pointers as to what does it look like, what does it feel like when you're in this, and for me, you guide by mood. There's a sense of mood that you guide by. You don't guide by external points. And at a certain point, that mood guidance becomes tangible. And it's tangible, and you move away from certain things and toward other things. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, but now, let's continue here a little bit. Okay, during moments of threat, okay, that's during moments of threat. All right? We can use, if we have the stamina and instinct to do so, what? The invocation of presence as a weapon, or at the very least as a means of protecting ourselves from the various dangers encountered in the course of voyaging through the labyrinth. So I wrote down that, to me, that's an antidote to fear. It's an antidote to fear.
Mm-hmm.
We've had experiences where the spaces were so intense that people fall out of the space. The way they do it, the way it actually manifests, is they fall asleep. They just go to sleep. It's just like they get tired and they fall asleep. You know that, right,
mm-hmm.
Ivan?
Yeah, I've been there. I've been asleep many times and waking up like to say, what, where am I? And then there's been a few times when I was like to look around and everybody else was asleep.
And that's because they weren't meant to be in that chamber. Because the chamber manifests into a different level. Certain people aren't in that chamber, so they leave. And
I was talking about being the sound man in a Soupy conference, and he was zoning out, and then they'd say something, and he'd suddenly wake up and adjust a few knobs and do the sound, and then go back into the nodding off.
That's an extremely good example of what I mean. You actually don't go to physical sleep, but you kind of leave that space. And in that jaw, in that moment, and I don't know where we're going to wind up in this book. I never do. Luca, are you on the phone? Hi. Is that you still need to do your job? Okay. You still need to do your job.
And that's being partially present.
That's different than some of the other students that I heard that were actually snoring.
Yeah. Part of what happens is that we have part of what is going on in the spaces, and Molly can tell us a lot more about it in terms of the reading and the ABD, is the cleansing radiation. So if you can hang, so if you can just be there, you're in the cleansing radiations of it. Sometimes all that you need to be able to do is exercise stamina and instinct. Stamina and instinct. The cleansing radiations cause that feeling of apprehension, because what is being cleansed? The humanness of us.
I've always considered that I've invoked the angel that is the presence of that healing radiation. So it's not me at all. I have to take myself completely away in order to get the cleansing radiation. The minute I say, "Oh, well, I'm going to get a cleansing radiation here," you know, changes everything for me.
Were you here when Ivan with the Seymour night?
No. I was
were you here? No, you weren't here.
No. Mm-mm.
You were still in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you talking about invoking?
Now the 33rd.
Invocation.
Talking about a morphological change. Now he's getting to the 30 birds again.
Okay, so in that, the Seymour.
The Seymour.
And there's actually a talk.
Mm-hmm. There's the talk of the month.
Isn't that chapter in the Human Biological Machine, or is it in here?
So in this particular situation, there was a community event.
Yes.
It was in the evening, and we had a full house, and everybody was sitting along the edge of the room, so the center was open. And in the center of the circle is where EJ was sitting, but he wasn't sitting in a chair. He'd actually lounge in like a set of pillows. Okay? And let's just say that whatever was happening, the space would go, it would cycle up and cycle up and cycle up. And it physically felt like it was getting much hotter. Like the physical feeling of it was like the pain of the heat. And several people had to leave. There were reasons that they had to leave. And the reasons that they had to leave were immaterial, but they had to leave. And the way that the chamber was was about half of the people were around the room, and then there was the hallway that ran down from the living room to the kitchen. Okay, so you can picture a circle, and at the base of the circle was a long hallway. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And as this continued to occur, at a certain point, some people felt something descend. And the descension of this thing was its body was encapsulated in the living room area, and it felt like it had a tail down the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And EJ kept going in and out of the space. And every time he'd come back in, it would be another shift and another shift until this thing occurred. None of us had the skill to know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But what did we have, those that were able to stay?
Witnessing system.
Stamina.
Stamina and instinct, yeah.
And instinct.
It's Bardo, that's a habit. Bardo habits is like not to bolt.
Ah.
Not
kay.
No panic.
So now
no bolt. Not making any sudden moves.
Okay.
My habits will carry me through.
So what you're battling is the pressure of that space and the intensity of it is part of what wants you to leave. The instinct to stay there and do your job is a wonderful instinct. And for me, and I was very new, very new, but my instinct was, I don't know what's happening, but I know how to stay in this space. And sometimes for certain participants, staying in the space means doing nothing but invoking presence and allowing something to happen. We'll get into something to happen much
yeah,
more as we get
there's
further.
There's quite a bit of this. By the way, this is chapter 12 in this book. The Simmer talk. Yeah, the Simmer talk.
We'll get into
we're
that
get
in much more detail.
12. But you've arrived at an interesting point, which is I recall very distinctly that prior to having this kind of training, let's say prior to doing a lot of this invocational work with EJ, I mean, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail anecdotes, but there are situations those coincidental chance situations I can remember falling into, you know, where I know now from looking back what the feeling was and what the atmosphere was, you know, those macro-dimensional spaces, Bardo kinds of spaces. You see, my habit or my tendency absolutely was to be ejected from that space, but it was just too uncomfortable and I would just get out of it. If I felt that kind of thing happening, I would tolerate it for about, I don't know, about 10 minutes at most, maybe 20. But I mean, I could tell you specific stories where I would just bolt. I said, hey, that's the hell with this. I don't have to be here. I don't have to stay here. And this is uncomfortable. And I would bolt.
And
so that's without training, basically. That's the machine reaction.
So that's where we began. And the very last paragraph in this chapter is very important. I'm going to emphasize it again. I'm going to try to get to it early enough that I can get some answers, at least from the people in this room. Okay, but the next paragraph is very important. Yeah. So we're still in chapter 3.
Invocation of presence.
So, were you going to say something?
First thing that David brought up is the
unresponsive guide.
The unresponsive guide.
Precisely, which, if anything, kind of has to lie in your spirit, are essential.
And something else.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into the something else much more.
Both require presence.
Well, it's stamina and presence, but it requires surrender. There's a remarkable for me, surrender is a critical element, and to know how to surrender. And some, we'll get into that a lot more, surrender and acquiescence to the space. Acquiescence is a more potent word to a form of surrender. But we had to surrender, we had to surrender who we were for the sake of what?
Yeah,
the greater morphology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is part of the ego. Which
absolutely.
I think Moksha was talking, getting
yeah,
to.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I was just specifically talking about that phase of it, of that specific unresponsive, certain things happen. So we're barely through this paragraph. The invocation of presence.
This book is like that.
Okay. The invocation of presence, the addition of quanta of attention and energy to the domain defined by our presence morphology can be used as a means of protecting others against negative machine emotions in reflex response to the macrodimensional events. Okay. Now, we don't have to go through each word there, but bottom line is that, but the main thing is, why does he say protecting others? What does that mean? Protecting others.
Heal or heal thyself, Jamal is saying. It's in the space, so you're in a chamber.
Well, I think that if you're...
Go ahead.
Well, I think that if you are present, then you are calm and you're open to the space, and therefore you're not projecting your negativism on others.
Okay, so that's exactly my point, too. We're at a point now where I'm going to use the term bardo etiquette. Part of our duty when we're in these spaces is we don't know what to do, as Ivan was saying earlier. What do I do when I'm there? Maybe, but at least we can do is invoke our presence and maybe not do anything and not do what is sometimes referred to as be a malaprop in the space, to bring our stuff into the space. If you bring your stuff into the space, it smells. You can smell it. I mean, literally.
I think that in these types of spaces where people have gathered and invoked presence, that you've agreed with the rest of the people that you're open, you're totally naked in those spaces. And to bring your machine manifestations back into somebody who is completely devoid of those things is harmful. I think it can kill. I really think it's so bad that it can actually...
It can be very dangerous.
It's dangerous.
And there's certain spaces that, in a sense, you don't want. You want to protect yourself from having certain people in those spaces because, quite frankly, loose your shoes, for this is sacred ground. We now move into sacred ground. If we're going to be in sacred ground, we need to respect it.
That's what I was going to say. I think the respecting the space, respecting the other beings that are in that space that we may not be able to see. We may not have any visual about other beings in the space, but they may be there.
Okay, I'm introducing this concept then of what I call bardo etiquette, voyaging etiquette. It's throughout. These are things in this chapter and why it's so meaty that we're going to see throughout the rest of the book. Okay? That's all. Okay. So I'm going to just jump ahead a little bit here. Okay, when the collected attention has been intentionally distributed to the chamber, okay, what does that mean? When the collected attention has been intentionally distributed throughout the chamber.
Yeah, it was the one I was talking about before. It's like a, not an accident or a coincidence. It's a muscle. I mean, it's a flexing of the of attention. It's an essential self use of attention.
It's a broad topic, but we'll just say, I just want to say that the invocation has thus started. If we place our attention in where the energy is in the space here, the invocation is starting, and we can begin to see it and feel it. And if you have good instinct then, feminine instinct, if you have good instinct, you'll know where to place your attention. And you'll support where it's going. You'll sense the ley lines and give attention to that. Make sense? Okay. And you should read the rest of that, but I'm going to head on. Just jumping ahead a few paragraphs. Our earliest work efforts were directed towards bringing the machine into the waking state. And we graduated to this, and then it goes on, and developing the rightful rapport between the machine and the essential self. But from now on, we'll be concentrating on the problems of the essential self as a labyrinth voyager, particularly in relation to its shamanic ability to function in the macro dimension. Can it be more clear?
Postgraduate work.
It's postgraduate work, and quite frankly, I mean, I think I know most of the people online, and nobody's even remotely of the a beginner here. So we're saying, okay, now what? Now what are we going to do? Maybe because you're here and musicians. When Miles Davis did, I think it was in Kind of Blue. I don't know if you know that album. Apparently, I mean, this was like the superstars of jazz at that time, in the early 60s. Like one take. Inconceivable when you listen.
They weren't multiple
no.
takes on those.
And he just kind of demonstrated the... where he wanted to go, and the skill level was just phenomenal, and they were able to, this is just a gorgeous album. So, they were voyaging, baby. Wow.
Well, I think that's going to get into the keys to elegant voyaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, here's an interesting, the next couple of paragraphs are interesting. The labyrinth reveals who we are in a very particular way. It generally coaxes us into unknown lands where we are expected to function at our best. And where we are ruthlessly apprised of our overall shortcomings and aptitudes. So now we don't have... I know some people who are not very good at the real world. I mean, by that, I mean not the real world, the small real world.
Everyday life.
Everyday life. They're really not very good at all at it, but they're exceptional when it comes to the bardos and voyaging and sensing when that's alive and up and running. Exceptional.
That's the importance of teamwork, too, of working with pack of green.
Yeah, we're going to get to that, and I want people to...
In a team, you have people with all different abilities.
Thus, you work in a team.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, we're going to jump to that last paragraph pretty quick. Yeah, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, because the sum of the parts is linear, and the whole is labyrinthine. It is. Because the whole, when the whole and when our presence, we can allow the angelic presence to come and visit, right?
Mm-hmm.
We hold it. We allowed ourselves to hold it. Very unusual experience. You can do it. Wild. So we're expected to function at our best, and where we are ruthlessly apprised of our overall shortcomings and aptitudes.
Appraised for. Sure. Our overall.
Appraised for, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's watching what we're doing.
If you do this enough, you are watched. I mean, you're noticed. You're enough in the game where you're noticed. It will happen that every once in a while we will find ourselves feeling stuck in a chamber or strange morphology and will feel the urge to shape shift. Faces open up and we experience vivid changes. Objects take on eerie luminosity. Distances seem impossibly stretched and distorted. When I happen to like Pre-Raphaelite art, and these guys, if their paintings are luminous, and they looked into a different through a different window than I do. How dare we think we're equipped for a fast lateral shape shift across the six-dimensional level, so long as we remain in our present condition. Here we bloody well are, out on our morning constitutional, mucking about in the areas of dark and unknown, depending for our very lives and old, worn-out equipment, this thing, and all those clever little primate tricks we've learned. But it's all useless, even dangerous, in labyrinthine domains more appropriate to a wily 4-billion-year-old shamanic warrior, but terribly inappropriate for a human primate, with the emotional level of a 2-year-old child prone to sandbox tantrums. Funny, huh?
Mm-hmm. I wrote one comment. Where's my blanket? Where's my blankie?
2-year-old. Yeah. Taking on a different mantle, too. And some people question, you know, they don't like the fact that, you know, the body and, the, you know, the hassle with human life and all this stuff like that. But I'll tell you, what an opportunity it is, isn't it? Because it gives the essential self a chance to grow 1 inch more, 1 minute inch teeny, because we have a machine. We have the opportunity. We have a chance to exercise the dance between the essential self and the human biological machine. And if we graduate into intermediate level, then maybe we can even entertain the concept of being of service. Just a thought. Okay. But I want to go to the last paragraph, and I would really very much love it if people could comment on this last paragraph, okay? We are connected, roped together for the duration, an exploration team, each dependent upon the others, and unless we are one of those rare birds, a macrodimensional Lone Ranger, it is only as a team that we can develop our work.
Did you want to read the last part?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Do you believe that?
Certainly coming from a knowledgeable authority on the subject. what comments have you got over there, Molly?
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Simon. He's in South America at the time. Yeah. Somewhere, maybe in Argentina or Bolivia or some darn thing.
See? Mm-hmm. It says here, roped roped together for the duration of the assignment situation here. But the duration is almost up.
Wait a minute. But this is just this is a book that was written and it's on a shelf in a bookstore somewhere. Somebody buys it. And then they read that paragraph. What do they? What does it mean? We are roped together. What could it mean? Susan? Lupe. Lupe's phone is dying.
She's in a hospital.
So Lupe?
Yeah.
So. Okay. Well, we're connected to you too, Lupe. We definitely are. Okay, we understand. Okay.
Well, an exploration team is like those mountain climbers. You know, there's an image from the fourth wave.
Tell your mom that it's just exactly the right moment for you to be listening to this particular chapter, Lupe.
One of the things about the exploration team that I wanted to say is if we are on an exploration team, this really does assume that we did the first book, that we are an awake group doing this.
But does it mean
I'm not sure if this is meant for John Q. Public. You know, I don't know how they would take it. But I see it as a manual.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But does this mean that I'm roped to you or linked to you?
If we're doing this work together,
but
then yes, I think
do. I think for a novice reader, it's the manual for labyrinth voyaging, but I think it can be an invitation to someone who reads it.
We are connected.
If it resonates, I'm trying to think of what it is. If it brings up the yearning, the desire, and the wish to be enjoined, to be roped. I think what is that thing that Lee Lozovic means, spiritual slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You know. If this idea masochistically appeals to you as spiritual slavery, and you pick up a book like this, then you jump at it.
Anytime you're in a effort, a sports effort, a musical effort, a performance, an acting group, you are dependent on each other.
A world incarnation was suggested.
I also maintain that it's possible that that phrase actually means that we are connected. Lupe says she can feel the connection, and we appreciate that, and that's why I said what I said. And I maintain that anybody that got this far in this book and read that paragraph is part of the we.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, this is, EJ said a wonderful thing. For me as a writer, and I repeat it once again, that EJ said this wonderful thing in regard to Mark Twain, you know, that Mark Twain writes a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court or Huckleberry Finn, and people read it, and they read it in his lifetime, and then he dies, and it gets published, reprinted over and over again, it gets translated into 87 languages, and people are still reading it, and this is Mark Twain's invocational circle.
That's right.
They're all joining when they read alone or together or whatever, they read the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, they're part of Mark Twain's invocation. Calling them with his artifact, with his work.
So,
interesting. That is true.
So we can call this forth at any time, and I call it like a lever. Okay, we can leverage our effort when we read that paragraph, and we know. Even when you're sitting there and you're working with invocation of presence and you're in a difficult moment, if you remember that paragraph, that you understand that there are other voyagers. We happen to be right here. What year is this right now? 2012.
Allegedly.
And, you know,
February 22nd.
22212.
And we happen to be, the people that are here right now are in the United States. We happen to be, you know, on the planet Earth at this moment of time. Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
You can express certainty on that.
And and that's the accident, that's the external accident of where we are. Because we might have been roped together in the beginning of the 18th century in England as an apprentice to William Blake while he was etching these incredible etchings that he did.
David's getting into the area of a book called Jesus Christ, written by a man who taught it.
So in a certain way, what we do know is we're kind of here right now. And we pick this up and we can read and look at it and we can say, we are connected. We are roped together. So, Lupe, we are roped together. And your mother showed up at this class for some reason. Okay? We don't need to know what the reason is, nor does she. Not important. So that's an important part of this practice of labyrinthine voyaging is that last paragraph. And I really, it's one to put paste on your wall or on your refrigerator or the inside of your car if that's where you live.
Why don't you repeat your request there? For
what was my request
posting?
Again?
Posting?
Oh, so there's the website, wingsofchaos.com and Life in the Labyrinth, Chapter 3. And right now, you are in a different space than you were 2 hours ago. 2 hours ago, you had the road dust, what I call the road dust on you. You've come to this and you've cleansed yourself a little bit, not through any particular individual here, but through the cleansing radiations of the group presence. So you've cleared yourself of that. Use that clarity then, should you feel so moved. Go on the site and post something. And then post something, and that's part of manifesting. We are connected. We are roped together. Yeah, so in closing, we're going to read.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Marianne.
Here.
Almost anything can be used as a key if used voluntarily and consciously, provided you can find a lock.
Usually Ari will send it. So, is there any more questions, Molly? Or yeah, Piff is a good one. Particular lock. Well put. Yeah, well put. That's. She's bang on. That's a really important point. It's this particular group created the morphology that is this space. Now take a note. He's in this space.
Simon is here.
Happens to be physically in Bolivia. But does this feel different than when we started? Any bit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
So something's, that's the material that we feed the essential self with.
Mm-hmm.
That's the making a deposit in the essential bank. So there you go. So thanks, everybody, for coming, and thank you for being here. It's so nice to see you. And thank both of you.
Thank
Hopefully
you,
we'll do
and
that
both
again.
Of you too.
And both of you.
I put it on the log, but I'll say it again, that tomorrow night, at the same channel that you're on, at 7 p.m. Pacific time, is going to be a wonderful concert. Hope you're there. Hope to see you there.
Tune in.
Tune in, baby. Yeah. Thanks for coming. Good night.
Good night. Thank